From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Some of us plant a row or two of annuals for cutting, but today's guest has taken the phrase cutting garden to the most delightful extreme. From the first spring bulbs to the final asters of fall, ceramic artist Francis Palmer's Connecticut garden is a nonstop harvest. No flower gets more of the prime real estate in her beds than dahlias, and she grows hundreds of dahlia plants each year. Growing great dahlias is our topic today, so more in a moment, but first these messages.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
Programming and underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, now offering 100% organic vegetable, flower, and herb seeds for that farm and garden. Available at highmowingseeds.com.
Francis Palmer is a well-known ceramist and gardener, author of the 2020 book Life in the Studio, and creator of a popular Instagram account, too. I'm so glad to have her join me here today on the show. Hi, Francis. You came in from the garden to talk.
I did, although truthfully, it's kind of pouring rain outside. But yes, it's a good day for ducks.
So we just worked on a New York Times story together about your incredible garden. And so I wanted to say, we're also going to just do a book giveaway with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com of your great book, The Life in the Studio, Inspiration and Lessons on Creativity. So we'll do that. But when we collaborated on the recent Times story, you told me something that I didn't really put together in my head before that. You told me that it was your ceramics and specifically the need to photograph the pieces you made that brought you to the garden in the first place. So tell us a little bit about your background. How did you become a gardener?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to, to speak. This is great. Well, my mother had a small garden. She had peonies and tomatoes, nothing too elaborate in New Jersey, in Morristown, New Jersey, where I grew up. And I had wanted to have a garden when we first moved out to Connecticut, but we were in this 40s glass house that was cantilevered into the hillside and very shady. So when we moved to this property almost 30 years ago, and we had lots of sun and land, I had been studying books and had kept coming across these dahlias. And I just couldn't believe there was a flower on the planet that looked like this. And coincidentally, my husband's from San Francisco. So we went out there every summer when the kids were small. And the San Francisco Dahlia Society maintains this extraordinary dahlia garden in the middle of the San Francisco park. And the people there were very dedicated. And the day that I went there, just for the first time so many years ago, was the day that they were having the dahlia exhibition in the exhibition hall not that far away. And I just remember like leaving the kids and everybody in the car and like, I'm sorry, I have to go. And I just was blown away. And everybody there kindly shared all their resources, Swan Island dahlias, Ferncliff that you mentioned in the article. And, you know, I've been ordering from them ever since. And so, and the nice thing about growing a dahlia is they're not really that fussy. So it was pretty easy to have success right off the bat.
Right.
And that was thrilling.
And so you were already doing ceramics and you're making these ceramics and you're selling them, but you realized you wanted to keep a record of them, I think you told me. And so
yes,
you started wanting to take pictures, and these incredible flowers, sculptural and vivid and whatever, kind of became the props to
do
that?
Well, they did. Well, I had started, by the time we moved over to this property, I had already been making pottery. And from the very inception of my work, I documented everything because, as I explained, I went, you know, it's functional. So I wanted people using it and therefore it would leave the studio. So right, I would go to the 28th Street flower market and get flowers and bring
them
home.
City, right, right.
But
right.
But as you know, there's nothing, even, of course, the whole thing has changed so radically since 30 years ago when you went and bought flowers. They were commercially grown flowers. Now, so many people are flower farmers and they're selling their flowers to people, but they have an authenticity that I couldn't find when I first started wanting to grow. And I just found that what a flower that you grew and its lifespan and the way it behaved was so different from something that you would buy in a wholesale flower place. No, right. No disrespect intended.
No. And you're right. It has that whole world of flowers, the local aspect of it and so forth has changed that, but 30 years ago, definitely not. It was more limited selection and more formal, you know, roses and tulips and whatever.
And then I would be reading all these English garden books as well as your book. But I would order from Thompson and Morgan because you could get the seeds shipped over from the UK. Right. And you just couldn't find those varieties here.
Right. So after talking to you recently, I'll confess that I binged a little on some dahlia tubers.
Right.
Got me going. So you just mentioned like Swan Island, I think Ferncliff, is that?
Yes.
And just so that we don't forget to shout out a couple, because there's still time almost everywhere in the country to get started.
I just got this wonderful message on my Instagram from Bear Creek Farm. I think they're in Connecticut. I should have done my research. But anyway, Bear Creek Farm is a local dahlia tuber supplier. You can go to them. It's amazing what is available for people to select. But again, that's one of the things what we talked about is that you shouldn't get too hung up on, you know, a particular dahlia and drive yourself insane.
And I want to talk about that in a second. But so like Old House Gardens was one place you sent me. And and it's funny because, of course, I've known them forever, but I didn't think, oh, that's a dahlia source. But they have like all these antique varieties and you learn the history.
Yes, I know. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So, and I mean, Swan Island has like over 400 kinds listed. Swan Island dahlias, I think they're the biggest provider in this country.
Yes, but they have excellent quality. So
that's
the good news.
And I did a little homework after we talked, and you know, was trying to figure out like how many dahlias are there. If there's 400 at Swan Island catalog alone, like, and I think the American Dahlia Society said there's close to 11,000 registered so far. The international ones, if you know, with the Royal Horticultural Society and so forth. If you go over there, there's even more listed.
I know.
Historically, there's been tens of thousands over the, you know, years and years and years listed.
Right.
It's like a lot.
Yeah. Well, when I give that class at the NYBG and in that slideshow, it said that by 1825, there were over 700 dahlia exhibitions where people could display there. So, I mean, it was something that once these tubers made their way from Mexico to Spain or England or the Netherlands, the dahlia mania in the 19th century just was crazy. And so then I guess they fell a little bit out of fashion, because when I first started growing them, people would go, ooh, dahlias, ooh. And, you know, that isn't the case any longer.
Right. And so you just mentioned the class at the New York Botanical Garden twice a year since 2015. You give, I think, is it called Dauntless Dahlias?
That's what they named it.
Yeah. Every March and October, I think you give that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have an open garden for many years in your Connecticut garden for the Garden Conservancy Open Days. When is that?
Yes. This year it's September 30th. And I was looking on the website and it says this, you can't sign up, I guess, until June 30th. So if you want to go, then just mark it on your calendar.
Yeah. And I can give the link to people in the transcript of the show.
Okay.
So that they can at least bookmark that and know where to look. You started to talk about, so there's just such an incredible number of possibilities, and you know, again, I was like scribbling notes while we were talking to do the time story and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I want this one, I want that one. Ooh, you know,
I know.
Want to describe. And I'm sure your students feel the same way when you're showing slides in the class and stuff.
Right.
But what you told me is like what you were just saying. Don't get hung up on, I've got to have that one. It's more like, how should we shop? What should we look for?
Well, I think again, if there's a particular color that you are very fond of, like a light pink, a dark pink, a yellow, anything, you that could be your parameter for choosing. Or you could go, I want something starting very small up to very large. So there are just so many different ways you can go about it. And also the good news is that if it doesn't work this year, what do they say? Hope springs eternal. There's always next year. You know, you try again. I mean, these things, you have to just allow yourself a little bit of time for trial and error and all of that, and not be too hard on yourself.
I mean, you said something that really to me the other day that evoked an image, which is that you could just order different ball-shaped dahlias and make a garden of ball-shaped dahlias, because there's these incredible shapes,
yeah,
like cactus ones. You could have this insane like cactus thing going on, right?
If you just did ball dahlias, you could do those little tiny pompons is how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
The tiniest to the, just like do all different colors, bicolor. You could have a field day just doing that one particular shape.
Yeah. So shades within a color, or different shapes, different sizes of the same shape, et cetera,
exactly.
Et cetera.
And also ball dahlias are typically really good cutting flowers because they usually have nice, strong, long stems without too much effort.
So I want to talk about effort then. I want to kind of take some time now to go through the Eustacia tubers. Not that you have a lot of tubers or anything, 25 cardboard boxes, I think you confessed to me, that come out of the cellar, the frostproof cellar. So you stash them over the winter. But so you're taking them out, and tell us, like, when are you planting them? How are you planting them? I mean, people are in all different places listening. So what are some of the basics if you walk us through the version of how to plant?
So there are the two types that we talked about. If you've stored the tubers over the winter and you're pulling them out, you want to look and make sure that the clump of tubers has, the tubers are firm. Sometimes, like a lot of the ones that I'm pulling out now, have already started to sprout. You see those little like potato bud eyes coming around the stem. That shows that it's a viable, I mean, if it's shriveled or it looks moldy, that is, it's not going to work. So you just have to kind of examine everybody. And I try very hard not to have them break apart because I have so many, I don't want to have multiples. But if you want to split them so that you have, if you have a dahlia that you really love and you go, oh, I wish I had more, you could, you know, if it, sometimes they break apart very simply or otherwise, you can take a knife and like literally just cut through the center to give yourself more of that same type. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, of course it is pouring now, which is not a great thing, but I did start planting them already because I just wanted to kind of get things going. So it's a little bit on the early side. So I would say for the Northeast, you know, any time in the month of May, depending on how far north you are.
And so generally, is it kind of, when you say May, I think tomatoes is like wherever someone's gardening in the country, it's sort of like, if it's okay for tomatoes, it's okay for dahlias. Is that sort of the guidance?
Definitely. But I tend to push it and get the dahlias in earlier than the tomatoes. The tomatoes, you really have to wait, but the dahlias, especially if they're older tubers, they're ready to go. So they're a lot more, you know, easy to do that way.
And so your garden, as I said at the beginning, is really like a cutting garden. It's this giant cutting garden and a number of beds within two big areas. And so you really, that's your planting system, is you're gridding them out almost to get the most space, you know, use the real estate to have the maximum flowers.
Yes.
So what are you doing? How are you supporting them? And when are you putting the supports up and things like that?
Well, you know, as you wrote in the article, the most important thing about the planting of the dahlia tubers is putting a support system in place the minute you put them in the ground, because their stems are hollow and very brittle. And if they've flumped on the ground and you want to go and pick them up to put them inside a cage, they'll just snap.
Oh.
So you really have to have that support system, whether it's bamboo or, as I use, the tomato cage or anything, then as you plant it, so that as it gets larger, and if you need to put string around the support system to hold it all together, but you really can't do it afterwards.
Mm-hmm. So we put our support in. Now you, because you're doing this as a cutting garden, you're using a tomato cage held up by a stake or two for each plant. Is that?
Yes. And I put them like right next to each other.
Right.
And so the taller dahlias tend to support, you know, they're so close together, they tend to support each other. And then once all the dahlias are in place, that's when I go around and I put in, you know, the zinnias and all the sunflowers and all the, you know, the other stuff that I want to have going at the same time. I've got the bearded iris around the edge of the beds so that I don't, you know, so everything is kind of strategized so that things don't interfere with each other.
Right. And if it were a garden that were being designed not for production like yours is, but for, you know, if it were a mixed border, for instance, and I'm incorporating some dahlias, I might skip the tomato cage and just use the stakes and twine.
So that they're not very pretty, but they function, but they're not pretty. So if you want the dahlias to be part of a perennial border or something like that, definitely just use the bamboo and then again, they'll be hemmed in by other plants. So that will, like we talked about Wave Hill, where they do that so beautifully.
Yes, the garden in New York City, absolutely. So I'm digging a hole for each one. I'm not burying them too deep, am I? I mean, it's not like they're, how deep would you think? How much soil on top?
If it's a new tuber, you only want to go like an inch or two down, really kind of just below the surface. If you put a new tuber in too deeply, it will most likely rot, especially if you're, you know, at this time of year when the ground is so wet anyway. And I don't usually even water the garden. Of course, it changes every year, but in most of the time, I could get almost to June without watering. Lately, of course, where it's so much warmer, I would say mid-May, I finally give in and turn on the sprinkler. But in the beginning, a new tuber, you don't want to put down too deeply. And then, of course, an older tuber, that's a big clump. You want to dig the hole enough just so that it sits below the surface.
Okay.
But that being said, sorry, I'm interrupting you.
No.
If you hurl something onto the ground and it's ready to go, it'll just go.
So you're hurling the tubers. Okay, so this is Francis's method. Go outside, hurl the tubers around. That's good. That sounds perfect. That sounds like how I garden. Some days it comes to that, doesn't it, Francis?
It so does.
So we have our tubers in the ground. We have our supports in place right away. So we have a plan for supporting them. And then they start coming up. And they are prolific growers. So do I let it all grow, do its own thing, or what do I do?
When you see there'll be a center stem that comes out of the ground and maybe like one set of leaves and even perhaps a little bud for a flower. And when it does that, you want to pinch out that center bud so that it will encourage the plant to branch.
Okay.
Especially if it's a new tuber, you're going to get one of those stems and you want to pinch it out to get it to encourage it to branch out. And that's kind of, once you've done that, it kind of gets it going on the right path.
Okay. It's the first stem that comes up and there's sort of three parts to it and I'm taking the middle piece out.
Pinching out the center bud. If you have you have an old tuber that sprouts many stems at the same time, I tend to just leave it alone because there are so many.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Good to know because I got new ones, obviously. So I'm I'm here. Like I haven't grown them for a long time. So I'm good. All right. So anything else besides continuing the support along the way as they grow? Anything else that we do?
Well, I find what I started doing a few years ago is spraying the entire garden, all the plant material, leaves and flower, every couple of weeks with seaweed or fish emulsion that you put like a quarter cup in a 2 gallon sprayer. And I just, one more, you get up, you want to do it in the morning because it's kind of smelly and you might need to shower afterwards, but I'll get up early in the morning and I'll just spray the entire garden every couple of weeks. And everybody seems to really love that treatment. Uh-huh. So
foliar feed. Yeah.
A foliar feed. And it keeps the dahlias very happy. I've, you know, haven't really had trouble with mold or any of that stuff.
Huh. Okay.
So that, it, you know, it, if you start that, say, mid-May, end of May, and just go through till frost.
Okay. So in the last 5 minutes or so, I want to, of course, know more wonderful ones, even though I'm supposed to only shop by either shape or color or not get too attached to anything. But just to, I want to know what, you know, kind of examples of some of the ones. I mean, like in recent years, for instance, that one, what is it? Is it called Cafe Olé? Am I making that
Cafe
up?
Olé, yeah.
That's become like a trending hot thing, especially for brides, you know, for use in weddings and so forth. It's like so barely pinkish, peachy.
Yeah, I almost feel like, you know, that Cafe Olé crescendo has peaked, and now people are going, but it's, the truth is it's a very beautiful dahlia. And what I like about it is that as the season goes on, and it gets a little funkier, the colors are, it's just very beautifully nuanced. So even though it has been in the past years a bit of a cliche, I still think it's really a beautiful dahlia to grow.
I think nuanced is a very good word for it, because the flowers are not identical. They're so subtle.
No.
Yeah.
And they get these wonderful, like, little curly cues when they start to get towards the end of the season. Yeah, I think it's all, but it is one of those tubers that some, you know, like everybody has personalities. For some reason, Cafe Olé doesn't store well over the winter. It's just one of those tubers that doesn't seem to like that. So I tend to order that every year just to have, you know, some backup. And whereas, you know, again, going back, if you want to know the kind of the great classics, go to the American Dahlia Society and read their list, even though it's quite extensive, it's still, you know, it's still great. I always try to plant like Spartacus and Zorro and, you know, all of those. Walter Hardesty is it's a very late dahlia, but once it arrives, which is probably towards the end of August, early September, it is the most beautiful white.
It's big. It's really big.
I mean, again, we wrote down Otto's Thrill, Myrtle's Brandy. That was, again, from that Bear Creek farm. And I just looked it up while we were talking. It's in New York State. It's not in Connecticut, but it's a great East Coast supplier. And I'm just trying to think.
There are some that aren't subtle at all, in the sense that either they're such giants two colored petals and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, Bodacious, that is a great one. And
good name.
I know. And it is Bodacious. But what I love about it is that you store it. It's a good store, but when it comes out, it's different somehow. I don't know what happens when it's in storage. So the ones that I've had over the years, you can tell they're much different from the newer ones. Clyde's Choice is such a great orange. Kelvin Floodlight is a wonderful yellow. Thomas Edison is a great purple. And let's see, I'm just trying to think.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, those are some great ones. So
yeah.
We have just a couple of minutes. And so, you know, we haven't talked about your ceramics very much, but I mean, anyone who hasn't seen your Instagram, you know, it's just so arresting to see how you have connected these two loves of your life, you know?
Thank you. Yeah. I just, I don't know. I love making the work. And so what's really so important to me is, if, for example, if I know some pieces are coming out of the kiln, I go through the garden and think, okay, what flowers are happening now? How can I do this? Or if I see some flowers are happening, what is the vase? Do I have the vase? Should I make the vase? You know, it's like, I see all the tulips in the garden now, and I'm like, you should be making tulipiers, you know? But So I feel really lucky that I have this opportunity to make the work and have the flowers to use with them.
Well, it certainly is an arresting combination. And I mean, because your ceramics are, in the same way that the geometry of dahlias is its whole own world, your ceramics also have both a classic kind of element. Yeah. Almost eccentric, unbelievable element as well.
Well, so, thank you. But I also think that's the parallel between the flowers and the clay is that to a certain extent, both processes have an unpredictability. Like I can give it my best effort, but, you know, for example, I'm going to do a wood fire next week. Like what happens in the kiln or when you put a plant in the garden and what happens in the garden, there's a certain part of both of them that's completely out of my control. And and I love that aspect.
Yes. Well, I'm so glad to talk to you again. And you said that the similarity, and of course the flowers and the clay both come from the earth, don't they? They both come up out of the earth. So that's pretty nice too. We'll have to end there, but we'll have a giveaway of the book with a transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com.
Thank you so much.
In the meantime, thank you, Frances, for making time today. Now go back outside and plant more of the hundreds of dahlias.
I know. Okay, I will.
Thanks.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top quality spring blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
Programming and underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, now offering 100% organic vegetable, flower, and herb seeds for that farm and garden. Available at highmowingseeds.com.
And thanks to all of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of this show on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Instagram and on Facebook as @awaytogarden. And happy dahlia planting meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.